is the Law's performance in the Belmont and Acorn's smasher. You, Gamine's Acorn Smasher, you just feel really satisfied with good horses, great horses, you know, dispatching foes and just winning the way short-priced horses and horses with big followings are capable of performing. And that is exactly what we got in a few hours. If you were watching the America's Day at the Races broadcast, it was just, I mean, you couldn't take a breath. I mean, if you were, in addition to betting multi-race opportunities, if you were betting race by race and, you know, trying to play the board and make some, it was just intense. They're literally every, you know, 8 to 10 minutes, just if you were ping-ponging back and forth between Belmont and Churchill, let alone, you know, weaving in anything else. There was almost as much action on Saturday as there's going to be this afternoon. and at about 5 o'clock today, or 4:45, I think there's like 14 racetracks running. Monday's the new Saturday. Yeah, Monday is the new black. It's crazy. Absolutely crazy. There's now a log jam on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Especially this week, because the Florida thing where Gulfstream and Tampa both are going to run Tuesday, Wednesday as part of, you know, the qualification for simulcast. You know, it's, but today is nuts. When I go through that list, and I tried to figure it out what it's going to be sequentially, which was no small task when you start folding in Central Time. The performances that set people in motion in terms of debating who was more visually impressive and who was faster. It's just so kooky. The Tom's Detente and Midnight Bisou comparisons, contrastings, animosities. what? It's just crazy. It was just crazy. Let's focus. We'll worry about the figures and everything else in a minute or later or never. I guess if we took them in order, in the terms of timing, maybe that's the way to do it. How did they spill out onto your screen? Well, between Midnight Bisou, I guess she was first, and then Tom's Detente, and then Newspaper or Record. I mean, there had been obviously some nice performances before that, but Midnight Bisou and Mike Smith just with a blitz into the fast pace, and we'll talk later to Tom Amos again, actually, two Mondays in a row, but the fast pace that was being set by Serengeti Empress, and Empress and Talamo and Amos and that team did exactly what they were supposed to do, which was let the gates open, get the lead, and wing, and, you know, make everybody else chase. Mike Smith, you know, essentially sitting on a powder keg. Moved, you know, into the turn and just, I mean, as easy as a horse can win. and then just, you know, within a few jumps had blown past Serengeti Empress. Motion to motion, you know, I seemed to finally move forward a little bit in her last race, had kind of been treading water, and finally took a step forward. I made that note in the analysis, and she ran very well, ran courageously, and gets a nice second. And it's taken Balthus a while to kind of get her in motion, literally. And at 34-1, that actually, you know, $39 exacta. So if you took that approach, if you were a complete Midnight Bisou believer that nothing was going to beat her, and you keyed off that, you did okay. And another broad we should mention too, Pletcher, with the Farfellow Farm filly mare. Gets up and gets a nice grade two placement. But what was just sort of eye-popping was just how easily, I mean, Midnight Bisou went by and, you know, now has the rest of the summer to figure out. I reached out to Jeff Bloom, see if we can't get Jeff to visit. Get some thoughts from him. Obviously, this got her a distaff win and you're in ticket. People seem compelled after the performance in Saudi that, oh, she should be in the classic. She's knocked on the door in the distaff. Maybe, you know, going in as a heavy favorite in the distaff might be advisable. We'll see. We'll let Steve Asmussen, who's just is so thrilled that she's back for another season, and she comes back out of the trip around the globe in impressive fashion. That gets us to Tom's Détente and the Stephen Foster. This race had a different. This had a more even pace. And Miguel Mena, you could just see on the backstretch. I mean, this one was also essentially never in doubt. And at a certain point, Mena just, you know, leaned forward, and Tom's Détente corralled Pirate's Punch, who was trying to wing it on the front end himself. And it was over. In a couple of jumps. I mean, May got quick separation, and everybody else was running for minor awards, as they say. We'll talk to Al Stahl. In fact, we'll talk to Al Stahl first this morning, as he's got a 10 o'clock obligation. Tom's Détente powers away, and the 7-year-old, you know, is really at this point just, you know, dialed in again. Fourth straight win, dating back to the Fayette in October, is now 11-18, heading for Saratoga next and the Whitney. Really fun to, you know, see this horse at the age of 7. Get completely healthy, and, you know, as we've talked a few times with Al about him and about his development, this was a career best, gets a 109 buyer, and people seem just completely befuddled about two races at a mile and an eighth, one that is run in 148-4 and one in 147-1. The buyer measurement is based on speed, as Andy discussed as recently as last Monday, explaining when we talked about the spread between the
Amos winning the Woody Stevens, and that nice happy savor of Pletcher's, and you know, the difference just in the time and the distance and so forth. And that's exactly what you dealt with here. It's just a computation. It's that simple. And it's not somehow a questioning of how well Midnight Bisou ran. That's not what it is in any way, shape, or form. So, back-to-back, you get two spectacular performances. And then, in New York, newspaper of record advances off of the seasonal debut and was just terrific again. And that, in its own way as well, just as satisfying, follows up that Intercontinental from 7 furlongs to a mile. And, you know, there had been rain. And so people are saying, oh, she set a slow pace. She set an even pace on a course. They're calling it firm, but there had to be give to it. And a 105 buyer for her, actually, a career best as well. And I people are talking and they're going to line up to try to beat her the rest of the year. Okay. I just think about a horse like Catch a Glimpse. If you think back a little bit, Catch a Glimpse, everybody wanted, oh, we're going to beat, oh, yeah, we'll beat her next time. 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 Okay. I we'll see. We'll see. The rest of the action, particularly the action that tied together the three ovals on Saturday for the cross country, which started with Tom Amos and Dean Martini. We'll talk to Amos in the second hour. The Ohio Derby win, and that really got the day rolling. Dean Martini, and we got, you know, a terrific mutual on him to start that pick five sequence. Pays 31.20, and if you hadn't had a chance to see what went on in that race, they got a terrific Ricardo Mejias. That's his first graded stake win, the rider, and you could tell how thrilled he was. But we'll talk to Amos about claiming, you know, a high price claim, $50,000, and, you know, making this kind of success happen. This is a gelding, so, you know, he's going to be around. But, you know, to win $500,000 race on a horse that you claim for $50,000, it's a tremendous accomplishment. And we'll get some of the backstory, picking out the horse and those kinds of things when Amos talks to us. And, you know, from there, things went pretty swimmingly. You know, I hit the all button in the True North. We're going to talk to Kelly Breen. Firenze Fire. And this race kind of went sideways when Promises Fulfilled Saturday morning. Dale Romans had to scratch him. And then one of the two Coletti runners, Wait For It, who was interesting. Wait For It scratches. They kept Midnight Charlie in. But it really kind of took a little bit of the starch out of this, and it also made it uncertain, you know, how the pace was going to, you know, obviously you lose a horse like Promises Fulfilled who's going to be winging it. It changes things. Yorkton ended up setting the pace. Stan the Man ran another nice one for Terra Nova and Long Lake. But Errat Ortiz seemingly was, you know, sitting chilly with Firenze Fire. And, you know, if you were watching the feed, for everybody that, you know, just didn't know how to handle Firenze Fire after, you know, he came back in the Carter, that was a pretty tough spot to come back. And, you know, he simply was dull. He just kind of went around and it looked punchless. Maggie Wolfendale, pre-race from the paddock, that was the first horse she focused on, you know, logically. He was getting bet really heavily, was under even money at one point, then floated up towards 6-5. And she said point blank, he looks way better off the Carter, you know, 3 weeks ago. And, you know, it just looked sharper, fitter, and sure enough, you know, solid, very solid performance. And we'll talk to Kelly about the situation, having to, you know, get these horses from, in this case, you know, Ron Lombardi, been with Jason Service for years and years and put in a, you know, a very awkward situation, obviously. And for Kelly, too, to take over those horses and the ones that he's gotten from Ron. So we'll talk about that and also preview a little bit with Kelly the opening of Monmouth on Friday. Getting excited for Monmouth, and you can attend. I mean, I know people are still on the pins and needles, Spilkes, when it comes to Saratoga and being able to attend Saratoga, but you can attend Monmouth, and we'll get down to Oceanport and have conversation as the week goes on. But Kelly, certainly, as a long-time Oceanport resident and stalwart. So, Firenze Fire, and before that, in the New York, big credit. You know, we talked to Graham Motion last week, and he talked about Mississippi and Mean Mary, and Mississippi ends up scratching out of it, and Mean Mary, to Saez's credit, and I'm sure Graham, goes and takes control of this race. And wins the New York wire to wire and just powered away. Saez, we've said, how many times have we discussed this? How good Saez is at that kind of a ride. He has everybody lulled to sleep, and then boom, off he goes. And he guts them like a fish. So Mean Mary comes back off of the win at Gulfstream in the Orchid. And has now won three straight graded stakes. The Previant, the Orchid, and now the New York. Mile and a quarter. My sister Nat came late under Ortiz, Jose, to pick up a, you know, North American black type. Nice, in the New York. And then, of course, I reached out to Todd Beatty. We're trying to get Todd today for Victim of Love, the big upset in the Vagrancy. And Jose Lascano sat a beautiful trip. Jakarta did figure as the speed. And Victim of Love, you know, perfect stalking position, had been competitive, second in the Barbara Fritchie in February, and yet just kind of got overlooked. And the Tommytown filly that started out in last year and was in New Mexico, very nice job by Todd Beatty, who's, you know, of course, you know, the Fabulous Strike story needs no introduction. And Victim of Love just was in control. And, you know, for those that, if you were playing the pick five, you were wincing mid stretch. You said, the we're toast. We're toast. Chuck Cuellas, in the form. Chuck I knew I had seen that somebody had picked her, and Chuck Cuellas did. So great job by Chuck, who is never afraid to put 20-to-1 shots on top in his elections. Chuck, kind of a back room, kind of a boiler room handicapper for the forum, and is very sharp. I think most of us, let's say, got knocked out of the pick five right away in New York. But the rest of the action, including Harvey's little Goyle returning to the turf, you can't say you weren't warned. And that closed out both the pick five at Churchill and the cross-country pick five, and between myself and James Scully, I hope Lottie took it home. It was a good finish to a really, really fun day. Should mention Casadero, Santana winning the Bashford Manor. One of those, there's so many right now of these Asmussen maiden horses. And in fact, there's a couple more we'll talk about. But a very, very satisfying afternoon that gave way to Sunday, then the end of the Churchill season that was so welcome. And everything will turn toward Ellis Park for a week before the Keeneland session. We've got some sale conversation coming the next couple of days. They're going to get started at 11 o'clock down at Timonium. Quite a number, obviously, of horsemen and such. We'll talk to Rich Migliori. Mig will do the Monday, been alternating with Mig and with Joe Bianca. And Mig will join us. And he's at Timonium. Sort of, and he's doing work, continues to do work for Fasig Tipton, one of the New York regional reps. So we'll talk to Mig top of the second hour and get a on the ground at Timonium report as well. And traffic apparently very good over the weekend after the Breeze Show wrapped up, and quite a few interesting topics out of that. So we'll look forward to catching up with Mig. We're going to talk, I told you, to Amos, Kelly Breen, Al Stahl, and more. We got to go over the result in the future wager, closed out last night at 6. Value, I thought, was a little tough to find. I mean, any of the late emergent types that people are looking for, I don't know if you really got, the kind of number. Art Collector was 20-to-1. That we'll see. And obviously, when we get past the Bluegrass, and then there's just sort of, the group of unknowns that are particularly late developing. So, they're still going to have to, jump forward quite a bit to catch up to the honor APs and that type that are setting the pace toward Derby. Well, setting the pace toward the Whitney and the Breeders' Cup Classic, Tom's the Tot. And the story, of course, for the Bensons and, how that group of horses that started out and, getting to the Derby, and there were so many parts of it. Well, Tom's the Tot continues to write chapters that continue on, and Al Stahl joins us. Al, congratulations on the Foster.
Yeah, thanks, Steve. That was an amazing, amazing day, brought to us by an amazing horse. So we couldn't be more thrilled.
The thing about this, Al, you know, being a seven-year-old, and we've talked, you know, two, three, four times as he's, you know, continued to improve, and you know, the continuity now that is involved, and you know, the series of performances going back to, you know, late in 2018, you know, it's really a story of how a mature horse, you know, what we look, you know, forward to when you get an opportunity to keep a horse in training fully mature. And he's just, you know, gone strength to strength, and it's got to be very satisfying to, you know, see a horse fulfilling, you know, expectations, you know, after some fits and starts.
Oh yeah, it's the road, the road less traveled for most horses, and it's a rare occurrence, and we're thrilled that he's improved like that. It just doesn't happen too often. I mean, we gave him time. We gave him time because we had to give him time. It wasn't like, well, let's do this, thinking about running him at age seven. he needed it for various reasons, and he's responded every single time and delivered every time. And the fact that he ran that race the other day off of 2.5 month layoff with only a short stretch mile 2.5 months ago, it's mind-boggling that he could throw a time like that, and obviously a figure like that. Is just beyond expectations. We knew he was going to run well, but we also thought he was going to need the race. So if he needed that race, shame on him going forward. So another reason to be all fired up.
Well, and you know, there was also the storyline that people seemed eager to write or to create around Rosario not being available, and Miguel Mena gets the call. I mean, he's one of my favorites, won for us at Saratoga years ago, and I think he's consistently underappreciated. That's his second foster, as it happens, and he absolutely, you could see how comfortable he was, and you know, just, you know, stalking. He looked like a winner every step, Al.
Yeah, he did. He was obviously, he's a big horse. 1,200 pounds, and he's long, and you wouldn't think, just looking at him, he wouldn't be that good of a gate horse, but I guess he's just a very good athlete. He jumped so well most of the time, and he left there like his tail was on fire, and after that, it was all over. We had talked about following Mike Smith's horse, the Pirate's Punch, and just analyzed what kind of outside pressure we would get from the Calhoun pair, and they kind of didn't range up to our outside, and that was it was over. I mean, he just settled into an absolute jog for him, and kicked and made the lead like he always does, and started waiting, pulling up a little bit. The ears went forward. Miguel's looking at the big screen and seeing where everybody was, and he just cruised him home, and still was only 2/100ths of a second off of Victor Gallup's track record. So it was a phenomenal performance.
Wins off by almost five lengths, and just, you talk about, you know, the time was just smashing. What's interesting about his style is that he can really adjust to any pace. I know there's, you know, subsequently after the two performances of Midnight Bisou and Tom's Detat, everybody was talking about the pace and the differences and so forth. Tom's Detat has proven now repeatedly that if it looks like it's going to be a mundane pace, well, then he can attend it and finish. Or if they're going to be fast up front, he can lay back a little further and come with a run.
Yeah, I think that's something nice to have in our pocket. He's an intelligent horse and very tractable, rateable. And back to Miguel, there was no drama. Ron Anderson had called me well in advance, laying the groundwork that, you know, the Eclipse champion, Uni, running back, and I fully understood it. And as soon as I hung the phone up, I called Miguel and said, "You're in." I said, "You've worked this horse a jillion times," and that, honestly, it's the last I thought about it. and I wasn't worried one bit of what he was going to do on the racetrack. And like you said, he was very comfortable on the horse. So if that pace had gone on like a 46, Miguel, I'm sure, would have eased him back half a dozen lengths or so and picked him up when the time came. And like I said, there's a lot of things to worry about going to a race from a trainer's standpoint. Worrying about the jock with this particular horse is not an issue.
Talk a little bit, and this is your second, not only was it Miguel's second win in the Foster, it's your second, of course, with Blame, and, you know, I bring this up every time at this point, Al, with this horse, the satisfaction of, you know, stringing together performances and seeing this horse just excel and, you know, become, you know, one of the elite horses in the division and leading contender moving forward toward, you know, assignments like the Whitney, which appears to be next in 5 weeks here at Saratoga, and, you know, Breeders' Cup Classic down the road. You know, for you and for the Bensons, it's just got to be really rewarding to, you know, capitalize on this horse's talent.
There's no question. We thought he was that kind of horse all along, but there's a lot of grade one horses in our business that have never seen the light of day for various reasons. And for him to be here after all he's been through and to be at this level, it's you know, we're all happy for ourselves, obviously, but we're really happy for this horse because we're on him 24/7. I mean, if there was one thing we didn't really like or some bit of attitude that act like he was, you know, going a little south on us, we shut him down. But he's just forward and bright and eats everything and screams for his feed. And like you said, the continuity has gotten him super fit and all dialed in. And he's held up well. So it's just a true stroke of luck, really.
Al, I want to ask about one element that people might pick up on the PPs, and, you know, in the Fayette and at Oaklawn, a lot of, I think, you know, we had moisture, varying degrees of moisture on those tracks, and you put front wraps on them both of those races, and for the Clark win and for this win, they were off. Explain to people what they should understand when they see that, you know, that a horse had fronts on.
Right. Well, for him, it was just strictly for protection. Sometimes, you know, you get that wet, grainy sand. Keeneland's a little bit like that, and Oaklawn can be that way. I just bubble wrap type thing for the horse. Just, it has nothing to do with support of an ankle or a 1,200-pound horse going close to 40 miles an hour. Some cotton and some vet wrap's not going to, you know, it's not going to help him if there's some issue. So I just strictly do it for protection. I don't want him to burn anything, and you get a little strawberry type thing if they brush or run down a little bit. I just eliminate that on a wet track. That's all.
You know, for people that see that in the PPs, wanted you to take a second and explain it. And before we talk about in good spirits and the effort turned in the regret, I do want to go back for a second to Friday, because you made it a hell of a weekend for the Bensons, because locally owned won the allowance on Friday.
Right. No, locally owned found his little niche going around two turns, and he's a nice horse. We yelled at him. He's just a fun, good, solid horse to have around. The Bensons have two horses in training, period. And locally owned is one, and Tom is two. So these are the last two standing, and we're going to try and carry them along as far as we can.
Well, and locally owned, the Distorted Humor out of the very nice 50 Shades of Hay, as a 4-year-old, might be plenty of might be plenty of racing left for him, and you know, high 80s buyer type, and he'll, you know, continue to keep nice company. Talk a little bit about In Good Spirits, and you have to be pleased with this performance. You know, the two, you know, the winner and the runner up Crystal Cliffs for Graham Motion. We talked to Graham about, you know, about her, and she obviously was bottled up, but In Good Spirits ran a, you know, very nice, courageous race, chasing the winner, and ends up getting, you know, holding third here at a square price.
Right. No, that was a, she fell out of the gate in her first three races on the grass and ended up on the lead, and while she's not a run-off, aggressive speed horse, we were wondering how she would do with a little bit of adversity, and those two outside horses kind of went past her, and she ended up in the pocket. So I was happy that she accepted all that, and she found some daylight. She kicked on. Certainly would like to see her kick on a little more, but to hold on and be a grade three stakes place horse. My guess would be she might not have quite stayed the mile and eighth for whatever reason. You know, a little bit shorter, she might have a little bit more of a punch, but the main thing that hopefully all of us, especially the horse herself, the filly herself, is she tucked in there behind those other horses and was a willing participant without, you know, freaking out or overdoing it and getting herself in a spot. So she didn't get too aggressive. And so going forward, you know, she's not going to be on the lead for every race of her life. So I think that will help her in her development, which we're trying to do. We gave her the winter off, and now she's had a couple races back, and I think the best is in front of her. She'll be
feels like it.
Yeah.
Well, and she's coming back to Saratoga. She was bought, you know, at the yearling sale, $200,000, and Balmar Equine. So we'll look forward to her, because she clearly took a step forward here in her first opportunity against graded stake company. And she's by Go Sapper out of an Archmare. And, you know, Al's got a very good record with things that have arch in them.
No question. That's where the class is coming from. So we're excited about her going forward. They get better with age anytime they have that bloodline in them. So she should have a good summer for us.
Speaking of the summer, Al, give us a little bit of a preview with Churchill coming to an end, and, you know, with the, you know, the specifics about, you know, the string you'll bring to Saratoga, and the very good racing that also lays ahead at Ellis all summer, but also the, you know, the little brief Keeneland session. Some thoughts about, you know, how many you keep there and how many you send to New York.
Right. Well, you know, this is obviously a different year for everybody, and the big difference is that Derby week is starting September 1st, so that's going to kind of, everybody starts pointing for that week with maidens and certain type horses, so we'll have a little bit of that going on. Those type horses will stay in Churchill. The Keeneland, I'm coming backwards for whatever reason. I guess I'm a backwards kind of person, but the Keeneland meet will be half a dozen horses, something like that, you know, six or so. And I sent over about a half a dozen sets of papers to Ellis Park this morning to get the zero date. So we'll run, you know, a handful in Kentucky this summer and get ready for, it's only 60 days away, get ready for the September type meets that come around, where it's going to be Churchill and Kentucky Downs, and we'll take Saratoga. Martin, the Saratoga office gave me 12 stalls, which is perfect for me. My crew will be in the COVID testing tent in a couple hours to get their test done. Today is my day, and when we get all that squared away, we'll ship up to Saratoga with roughly that amount of horses. Be a mix of some two-year-olds and some older horses, and, you know, this, well, whatever we think fits. We're very, very picky about that because Saratoga is so tough. We really don't, the manifest doesn't really fill out till almost when the ramps are dropped by the vans. You want to make sure you don't want to take a horse that you have to turn right around and send back and things like that. So it'll be a dozen up there, and then spotty racing in this area for the next 60 days.
I appreciate the update, and, you know, I
I noticed too that among the horses that are kind of an advance party, I suppose, you've got Dalica running Friday in the license fee.
Yeah, I thought that race came up nice for her. I like the draw, and we were really impressed with her. She's a very aggressive mare. She's the opposite of In Good Spirits. In Good Spirits shows speed, but she throws her ears up and turns off. This filly wanted to charge all the time, and she got herself in trouble in a couple races. And we just said, hey, let's put her in a race with a very fast pace to where she can't run off. You can throw her head away, and she still won't be on the lead. And that's exactly what Joelle did in the turf sprint here in May, and she really kicked hard home and kicked home hard and finished great with her ears, you know, pricked and eased up. And we said, hey, maybe we have something here. And when the license plate came up, we're looking for Black Type. She's a great two place mare, but she hasn't won a stake. So the license fee makes a lot of sense, going 3/4 mile on the turf. And there's some pace in there, and let them hopefully rip away from us. And Joelle can do his magic and kick her up and see how she kicks on. But we're feeling, she's training great, looks great. Johnny Terranova's going to lieutenant for us up there, Tanya and Johnny, and I'll be watching on TV.
I love it. Al, I want to, I know you're headed over to Stanford, or I should say Muhammad Ali, and before I let you go, I do want to ask about one maiden winner that may have slipped through the cracks a little bit. Last Saturday, Partylicious won off in a debut, and obviously a delayed debut. Tell us about this filly, a fast Anna filly, you know, clearly a little slow getting to the races, but that was a very nice way to start a career.
Yeah, well, she slipped through the cracks for some, but not all. So we were anxiously awaiting her debut, and she was ready to run as a 2-year-old last year. Got a tibia, no big deal. Gave her a bunch of time and brought her back, and she was all ready to go at the end of the fairgrounds. And these guys are fun guys, the Johnson brothers Johnson from outside of Lexington, Kentucky, and we planned on Keeneland, and that didn't work, so she ended up running late in the Churchill meet just because of the calendar and the way the book came up and things like that. So she was ready to roll, and I didn't know she was going to hang a 109 flat on him, but we were happy with her training. She showed a tremendous amount of speed with the pedigree. That makes sense. And I wasn't 100% sure how she finished, but I was very pleased how she came home also. So very nice, pretty filly, good sound. So we're looking forward to having some fun with her.
I would say 87 buyer in this debut, and I keep a close watch, and good for that's great. The Johnsons, I've seen their names. They've had a handful of horses out.
They've been turf weight kind of guys, they're just good guys. They love the races. They're Keeneland, you know, most of it, you know, most days during the meet and things like that. So they're just good guys, and good things happen to good people, and they took care of their mare or their filly, and she grew up in their backyard right there in their house. And you know, it's just a good story. I went and visited, they called me to come look at her as a yearling, and I'm thinking, well, okay, we'll come and see what we got here, and I wasn't expecting much, and I was like, whoa, what we got here? I had a van over there in 3 days, and she was in South Carolina with our crew in October of 18. So that's how that went down. But they're good little guys, and they deserve everything that comes their way.
That's terrific. That's terrific. Bill and Marty Johnson with the homebred out of a not-for-love mare. Named Busy Bev, who herself was won a handful of races, actually won 7 times. Not a lot of money, but
they claimed for $10,000. They told me.
Did they really?
Yeah.
How about that?
Tampa Bay.
How about that?
Tampa
Good for
Bay.
Them.
Yeah. So wonderful game, right?
Huh. Well, and then they exactly. Listen, if you it's one of those stories that, you know, just shows if you can play it on a budget. And yeah, in her second to last start, of her career, and then went to Indiana, and then they bred her. What a great story!
Yeah, and
what a good story.
I think their phone's been ringing too, so we'll see what happens there. But it's one of the good horses in stores. One of many, I should say, of course.
There you go. Well, one of the best ones, the whole experience for the late Tom Benson and for wife Gail, GMB Racing, and very little went wrong with that group of horses that brought the Bensons back to the game. And the story continues as Tom Stetot heads for Saratoga and a Whitney collision, and the Whitney should come up very good. Al, best wishes to Nicole and the kids, and stay safe, stay healthy. I'm getting reports from a car right behind you. Clocker John has been behind you this whole time. And he says it's a good thing your horses run faster than you drive.
That's right. No problem. I'm keeping, like you said, I'm trying to stay safe. Two hands on the wheel.
I love it. Always fun to connect with Al Stahl, and Tom Stetot gives him a second victory in the Foster, also for Miguel Mena, and lots to look forward to. Al, thanks so much, and we'll see you up here at the spa over the summer, and might as well actually case, probably should want to take the break here, and we'll take an early break. Yeah, let's do that. We'll take an early break. Kelly Breen is going to join us, Rich Migliori, Al's good friend, Tom Amos. So we got a couple of New Orleans finest. They'll be with us. And more. Back after this at the races.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Our Pennsylvania breeding program was, of course, impacted by the pandemic. Now, with our country getting back to work, we'd like to again talk about our program, the best in North America. Our breeder awards will remain up to 50% for PA sired PA breds. Owner bonuses will also stay at up to 40%. Restricted races will again be run at all three PA tracks, and PA Day at the races will return. I'm Brian Sanfratello. For more, please visit PABred.com.
Developed by Horsemen, horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, environment-friendly, paperless revolution of how equine industries bill and receive payments. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for each horse, whose owners can pay through the same website with just one click. Say goodbye to stacks of invoices, handwritten checks, and postage costs. Easy accounting for all parties with the highest online security measures. Get started free at horsebills.com. Simply register with your name and email address. Free to sign up. No subscription fees to vendors until the first invoice is sent. For owners, you get a free account, comprehensive dashboard with information on all horses owned and billing records, ACH and credit card payment options. For vendors, generate invoices efficiently and receive payments quickly from both owners and other vendors. Syndicate and partnership managers get flexible billing and payment options to both vendors and syndicate members. For more info, call 888-938-4643, 888-938-4643, or log on to horsebills.com. That's horsebills.com.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
DRF Sportsform Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sportsform delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsform. Enter code DRFSports.
University of Arizona. Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Sirius XM Sports presents
At the Races.